Welcome once again to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. This week we have a little bit of old business and a little bit of new, kind of like a meeting agenda. We want to check in on some topics we've talked about earlier in the year and check in with some new topics that will be making news as we get closer to the end of 2017. And joining me for the discussion, as always, is Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, hello.
Hello, Brandon.
I want to start with something that we talked about last I checked about a month ago. This is the Senator Lamar Alexander, Patty Murray bipartisan approach to stabilizing the Affordable Care Act and its associated markets. What's new with that in the last month?
Unfortunately, not a lot is new, but there's been no congressional action. But the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, did weigh in on this bipartisan bill to restore what you remember we talked about, the cost-sharing reduction payments to insurance companies, and said the bill would indeed lower premiums as we expected and increase enrollment in market plans. So that's good news. Bad news, the damage to the 2018 markets is already done. You may recall that Senator Alexander was in a hurry, and he was in a hurry to make sure we could have an impact on the 2018 enrollment, and that did not happen.
Another thing we talked about recently, the changes that were made by the Trump administration to what's called the open enrollment period, that it was shortened, some of the money for outreach efforts and public notification efforts were taken away. Now the open enrollment period has started. We've already had some numbers about that.
Right. This is a good news story. There's been a surge in the 2018 enrollment over 2017 at this time. On the first day of enrollment, which, Brandon, was November 1st, we had double the number of enrollees for 2018 than we did for 2017. Now, we need to see if this trend holds over the entire enrollment period. The enrollment period runs until December 15th. So it's important that people act quickly. But the good news is that it appears that people appreciate having this coverage. This year, there is some more incentive that some of the plans are actually cheaper. But the really good news story from my perspective is the number of everyday citizens that have stepped up to assist their neighbors in getting the word out about the enrollment and assisting them in enrollment. And kudos to the large number of nonprofits that are working to make sure that everybody has health care coverage.
Next up, the Children's Health Insurance Program and Community Health Centers. We were waiting for reauthorization of both of those programs. You have to get the federal government, in this case the Congress, to pass a bill and sign off on the reauthorization, the re-upping of those entities. They were facing a late September deadline. That didn't happen. So what do we know now about the Children's Health Insurance Program and the Community Health Centers?
Well, I could say ditto here, Brandon. There's been no congressional action, but I need to say more. What are called PAYFORS, P-A-Y-F-O-R-S.
Okay.
And these are essentially what are policymakers, in this case, congressional representatives, willing to give up in exchange for reauthorizing CHIP. It's a major goal of the GOP, as we saw during the summer, to curtail the entitlement programs. So the rhetoric right now is, yeah, we'll reauthorize CHIP, we'll reauthorize the community health centers, but we need to take away from primarily Medicaid. So we're basically at a stalemate there.
Well, that's the old business. Now on our agenda, we move on to the new business. And this is one that threw me when you first presented this to me. We're going to talk about the tax reform plans that are making their way through the House and Senate. There are two competing versions with some differences. And I thought, as many of our listeners might, what is the tax reform bill, which we've heard a lot about in political news, what does that have to do with health policy? So bring us up to speed on this. What does that have to do with the subject of our discussion, which is health?
Yeah, no, it's very interesting that the tax bill has become a health bill in many ways. Not to say that it's not still a tax bill. The first thing, Brandon, that caught my attention was in the House bill, the elimination of the medical expense deduction. This impacts income tax filers that use the deduction, but it could have broad system-wide effects, as we've talked about before.
The ripple effects of a change over here means a change over there.
Exactly.
Okay.
But let's talk about first what it is. We have two U.S. policies that address long-term services and supports. In the jargon, we call them LTSSs. The medical expense deduction is one, and that's what the House is proposing to eliminate, and Medicaid is the other. This deduction is used by people with medical expenses that are 10% above their annual adjusted income. So it's very high medical expenses. If you take away this deduction, it could paradoxically increase a reliance on Medicaid, which doesn't really save the federal government money then. Now, here's another thing that's very nuanced about this. This affects a very small number of people, mostly individuals with disabilities, seniors, those suffering from chronic diseases, families that have children with disabilities, caregivers, people with mental illness, those taking chemotherapy that often is very expensive, and in some cases, people undergoing fertility treatments.
And you write that these folks comprised about 4.1 million people as of the year 2013, but represent more than half of Medicaid spending.
Exactly. So you can see why they're a target, but this is particularly disturbing to me because this is a very vulnerable group of people that have legitimate health care needs. I'm concerned that once again, in looking to do tax cuts, which seem to be a little bit regressive, that we're actually leaning the hardest on the most vulnerable people.
We should point out, too, the folks who claim those deductions, as of the year 2015, that was more than 8 million people, close to 9 million people, claiming about $87 million in those deductions. So there would, of course, be a financial effect. Mm-hmm. Over on the Senate side, there's a slightly different version of the tax reform package that would build in a kind of a quasi-repeal of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate. This would not be a full repeal. This would be a repeal through other means. Tell us more about that.
Right. Well, we have to realize that the tax reform bills that are being discussed currently in the House and the Senate are being discussed under reconciliation. And reconciliation rules have several specifics about it. And one of them is that you have to offset additions to the federal deficit with reductions in federal
spending. You get something,
spending.
You got to take something away, exactly. Try to balance it out.
Classic example of the pay-fors.
Okay.
One of the strategies that's being used in the Senate to be able to fund some of the tax reductions is to eliminate the individual mandate. Now, the CBO has said this might not be the best approach because the money that is secured by the federal government through the tax penalty for those who are non-compliant with the individual mandate is much smaller than the ripple effect that would be associated with repealing the individual mandate.
One of the ripple effects would be caused by healthy people leaving the insurance pool. You and I have talked about that before, actually more than once in this series. This is something people may not think about, because if you're healthy, it may not be at the front of your mind, but there is a back-end effect that drives everybody else's premiums up.
Right. This is an example, Brandon, of when we said that what you do in one part of the healthcare delivery system has an impact on another part, or what we are calling a ripple effect. This would be true with the repeal of the individual mandate. Without the mandate, many healthy individuals will elect not to have coverage. And then this would cause premiums to rise for those with health insurance. And the prediction is the rise could be as great as 20%.
You've also written there is a sort of a backdoor way that tax reform could affect Medicare, one of these entitlement programs, which we referenced just a moment ago. How does that work? How would that potentially play out?
Yeah, this is part of the rules of reconciliation. This was an add-on passed in 2010. Reconciliation can only deal with tax issues. That's why when they're looking at changes to the Affordable Care Act, within the tax reform bill, it has to do with the individual mandate because that's a tax penalty. Reconciliation can only deal with tax issues. It's time limited. We saw the efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act failed on a certain date, September 30th. Mm. And bills can be passed with only 51 votes. But another important nuance to your question is the reconciliation process is built as a pay-as-you-go process. So tax cuts and certain spending increases must be paired with offsetting provisions. If not, automatic cuts can be implemented.
All right, so how does this then affect Medicare?
According to the Congressional Budget Office, The tax bills currently being considered, and of course this is very fluid, would force $25 billion in immediate cuts to Medicare and $40 billion over 10 years. Stopping the cuts would require a bipartisan vote. So this is the way that Medicare is affected in a backdoor way. And then there would also be an additional $85 to $90 billion in other spending cuts. So although we're not speaking about the tax reform bill directly impacting Medicare, it will have an indirect effect if the current provisions are passed.
Congressional Republican leaders have talked about getting these tax reform bills passed by the end of the calendar year, certainly by the holiday break. So we have a lot of moving parts to watch over the next few weeks.
We have a lot of moving parts, and I think one of the things that people should be tuned into is the ACA repeal and replacement efforts late in the summer featured major changes, direct changes to Medicaid. So you would say, haven't we already dealt with that? Well, what we're dealing with now are focusing in on the individual mandate. It doesn't have the same sort of broad opposition currently that the major cuts to Medicaid does. So you have some senators who perhaps voted against this before who might vote for this now. But we are hearing objections, as we did in the summer, Brandon, about concerns about regular order. You know, let's get back to doing business the way it's been done for hundreds of years. But when you only look at the individual mandate and not Medicaid, it could be an easier sell.
Dr. Carol Myers, an associate professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, joining us on this pre-Thanksgiving edition of Health Connections. I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving early, Dr. Myers.
Thank you. I'm thankful for my opportunity to work with you.
I'm thankful that we get to have these conversations. And we want to let you know, by the way, if you're going to be doing any traveling, if you have any downtime, and you want to listen back to some of our episodes of Health Connections, you can do so very easily by going to our website, WUOT.org. We're also going to post links to our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. So over the holiday weekend, you have time to get caught up on health policy and how it may affect you and your neighbors here in Tennessee. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. You've been listening to Health Connections.